just sharing my certain thoughts with you, and perhaps we could think about it. I feel rather diffident to give any counsel to missionaries, but only just writing certain points which some of you may not see eye to eye with me, but I'm sure it would provoke certain thoughts and ideas in you which may be later on discussed. Now, when I think of the missionary, the first thing that comes to my mind is the great preparation he should have before he sets out as a missionary. Of course, he should first of all find out whether he has got a real vocation as a missionary, because I feel quite confident that God calls certain persons to do certain work, and the missionary is also a called one, a person who is sent, an apostle. So one should make quite sure whether he is certainly called by God to do this great work for God. Now, if he is quite convinced that he is called upon to undertake this great work for God, then he should certainly begin to prepare himself for this wonderful privilege he has been given by God. We have a very large field before us. The whole world is before us. So we have to choose or find out what is the place where God wants me to go. It is very important that from the very start we must have a very clear idea where we are going to be a missionary, because we have to prepare especially to be a missionary in that land. So once we have decided or found out where we are called to witness in, then we must certainly know something about that country, its history. It is very important that we should know the history of the place where we are going to preach the gospel. It's a recent development in those countries. What has happened, say, in the last 50 years? What political changes has taken place there? How is the country ruled at present? Is it a democracy? Is it a feudal state? Is it a monarchy? Or in other words, we have to have a very clear idea of the history of the place. And I would even say the geographical situation. What is the country like? Is it all flat or mountainous? What is the weather like? Has it got a very severe winter or a very hot summer? How is the humidity? Can I stand that? Should I be prepared for it? So all these things we have to find out. Then again, we must see, to what sort of people are we going? Are they just primitive aboriginal? Just tribal people? Have they been just headhunters or cannibals? Or are they people just like in some countries, like China or Japan or India, people with a very ancient culture, a culture that is going back to several centuries, even before the Western countries actually appeared on the map of the world. And if they have got a culture, what is the culture like? Again, what is the religion of the people? If you are going to India, the major religion there is Hinduism. If you are going to Ceylon, the major religion is Buddhism. We have the different religions of China and Japan. Now, what are these religions like? You must have a very clear idea of what Hinduism is if you are going to India. A man who has no idea of the religion of the country cannot actually, I would say, do the effective witnessing to the faith of Lord Jesus Christ. But sometimes it is tragic to find certain missionaries showing such dreadful ignorance of the culture and the religion of the people. A few years ago, I was talking to an English missionary. He was once upon a time an Indian civil servant, rather a British civil servant in India. Then he later on became a missionary. He was working sometime in Asia. When we were sharing certain of our notes, I was talking very highly about certain aspects of Hindu philosophy. Then he came out with a wholesale attack of Hinduism. Do you mean to say this religion that worships a god like Krishna, who is fighting with over a thousand girls at a time, is that the religion which you think 5 years out? I would say that is tragic ignorance of the Hindu religion. Because side by side with the several things you find in Hinduism, at the same time you find a very highly developed philosophy. If you just take the Bible and take some of the stories of the Old Testament and say, is this the religion which Christianity teaches? It is just the same as this man saying about the Hinduism. So you can't simply have a superficial idea. In Hinduism you get all the thousands and thousands of gods. It's idolatry. It's all sorts of very superficial and very primitive religious expression. But at the same time, you will find that behind and underneath all these things, apart from this, there is a deep and a very advanced religion. We have in the University of Chicago a professor who teaches Hinduism and Hindu yoga. He is a Romanian Orthodox, Dr. Eliaghi. He has written several volumes volumes on Hindu religion and Hindu yoga and maga and all sorts of things. He spent 5 years in India studying Hinduism. He was telling me the other day, you see, Father Philippos, I am an Orthodox. I belong to the Romanian Orthodox Church. When I got graduated from the university as a bachelor, took my first degree in the university, I was a sophisticated youth. I thought all the symbolisms you find in the Orthodox Church, all this, it's all nonsense. It is not Christian. People don't have any need of it. But after I have been in India 5 years and seen some of the symbolisms of Hindu religion, I have begun to understand my own faith, the Orthodox faith, and its symbolisms much better. I am a much more convinced and confirmed Orthodox today, he said. So there is no use in this whole, in making a wholesale denouncing of other religions outside Christianity and say it's all rubbish and nonsense. Well, if we go into a detailed history of the growth of Christian doctrine or the development of Christian thought, you find the whole Christian history was different. You take, for example, Saint Augustine, the schoolmen and the scholastic period. What have they done? They took the philosophy of other alien religions and accepted into the Christian religion or Christian faith and try to express the Christian doctrine through the medium of this philosophy. I don't want to go further on this point, but I feel very, very strongly that a missionary going to countries like this must have a very clear idea of the religions that are found in the country or in the place where he is going to preach the gospel. I have already said that the missionary should have a sense of vocation. But I would say to be an effective missionary, he must accept it as a lifelong vocation to a particular place. You can be a missionary just for 2 or 3 years and then come back and settle down. It will be just like a sort of nice sightseeing trip. It's good. But to be an effective missionary, you have to take it as a lifelong vocation. You have chosen a place, gone there, you have dedicated yourself completely to the Lord, surrendered to the Lord, and you have accepted this position. So, preparing yourself to adapt to this new country at your home. If you are coming back later on in life, at least your second home, and make yourself at home there. That is very, very important. Because unless you identify with this new country and with these people, your work in this country will not be as effective as it should be. Or in other words, the Lord cannot use you completely unless you make this great self-surrender. You are actually placing stumbling blocks before the Holy Spirit to work properly. It doesn't mean that some persons have a vocation to spend a shorter period there. I don't deny that. But to be a real missionary, to be a real effective missionary in a country, you have to choose the country of your own home, identify with the country and with the people completely. What is the motivation of a missionary? There can be several. I would even say that some people have the motivation of increasing the population of Christianity in the whole world. But I would say the real motivation of a missionary is a love of souls, a hunger and thirst after the soul, a real longing to save a soul or bring a person to the fullness of the life. We get the good picture of the good shepherd. The good shepherd leaving the 99 behind and just running after the one that is lost and trying to find it. That is the spirit. Even one soul we cannot allow to perish if we can bring that one soul to the feet of our Lord. We are doing the greatest service. So the real motivation for the missionary, it should be this love of the soul. I have been, and when you have this love of the soul or the people, love of the people with whom you are going to work, you find yourself completely identifying with them. Some time ago I was traveling from in Greece from Thessaloniki to Athens by train. By daytime, it's a very, very pleasant journey with a beautiful scenery on both sides. You can see at the foot of the mountain, Mount Olympus and other mountains. You find the shepherds going about feeding the sheep. But when the train comes nearly about the midday, you find all these sheep have been flocked in one place because it is too hot for the sheep to go out to eat, and they are all collected in one place. There is some sort of a covering over the head because it's all open country. It is the sheep fold. And one most interesting thing I found was, I was looking for the shepherd. All the sheep was lying on the ground, taking rest. And the shepherd had a little hammock tied over the sheep. It's just a sort of a slinging hammock. And the shepherd was also sleeping inside this little hammock. You see, even during the time when the sheep was taking rest, the shepherd does not leave it. The shepherd is sleeping over the sheep inside this hammock. It's not very pleasant to sleep because sometimes the odor which the sheep produce is not very pleasant. But what I was trying to show out of it, here is this shepherd, and here is this missionary of a shepherd, the pastor of his people, always trying to identify with the people when they are awake and when they are asleep. They are with them and they should be with them. That is their place. I always love to tell the story of St. John, which we have often heard. St. John converting a robber. And when he was leaving the place in Ephesus, he leaves this robber and with the bishop there, and then he goes away for another preaching tour. He comes back and asks for his son, and the bishop said, "Well, I'm afraid he is lost. He has gone back to his robber fold." And think of St. John immediately rushing, leaving everything behind, going into the midst of the wilderness or in the forest with the gang of these thieves and finding out this robber son, and then bringing him back to faith and to We don't know whether this story is true or not. We love to tell the story of St. John, which we have often heard. St. John converting a robber. And when he was leaving the place in Ephesus, he leaves this robber and with the bishop there, and then he goes away for another preaching tour. He comes back and asks for his son. And the bishop said, "Well, I'm afraid he is lost. He has gone back to his robber fold." And think of St. John, immediately rushing, leaving everything behind, going into the midst of the wilderness or in the forest with the gang of these thieves and finding out this robber son. A radio or a frigidaire, you can't get the electricity to run. Those are all small things which one has to sacrifice. But there are much greater sacrifices as a missionary one may have to take. In the history of the mission in India, we have missionaries who have tried to identify completely with the Indian people, often with the result of breaking their health and in a year or two returning home. Such a great tragedy took place in the great mission started in Pune. It is called the Krista Seva Sangha. It was a mission started by the Anglican Church, I think. There came first-rate men from Oxford and Cambridge, mostly university men, who began to identify completely with India, wearing the Indian dress, eating the Indian food, because poor people in India went without slippers or sandals. They began to try that too. But they found very soon it's not practical at all to live like that. Even if it becomes practical, I can boldly say that you will never be able to rival the Hindu sannyasi or the Hindu mystic who sacrificed him. Because he can live on nothing. You can't compete with him in making the sacrifices. So I would say, don't try to such extremes. But there is one thing in which you can rival, and that is real love. That is the only thing in which you can rival, because other things, from Britain or America coming to India and taking all these things, it will come to failure, because there are certain physiological or bodily limitations which one has to feel to. But there is one thing you can do, that is, you can rival anybody in Christian love and a real thirst for the losing soul. I was told a very, very interesting incident by a professor in Madras Christian College some years ago. He is no more, he died. He was a very distinguished Christian in South India. His name was Chako, K.C. Chako. And he was one of the founders of the Alve Union Christian College. He was sometime on the staff of the Madras Christian College. And there was, at that time, a principal called Dr. Skinner. He was a Scotchman. He was a very distinguished and a deeply Christian person. His students regard him as a great saint. This Chako, who was at the time on the teaching staff, became ill at one time. He had an attack of TB. So he was taken to a nearby TB clinic and was in the hospital for some time. And every day, this very busy man, principal of the Madras Christian College, Dr. Skinner, every day in the evening, when it became less too hot, Dr. Skinner would take his bicycle and ride 10 miles outside the Madras city to go and see his friend Chaco. Mr. Chaco was deeply struck and impressed. He could not understand how this man could find so much time, such a busy man as Dr. Skinner, to come and see an ordinary person on the teaching staff and sit with him and talk to him and show such a great kindness. Mr. Chaco is no more now. He was once telling me, oh, how much that love has really influenced me. It is quite true that missionaries coming to far off countries cannot rival in sacrifice other people like the Hindu mystics, but in the show and expression of love, they can love, they can rival anybody. So that should be our motive. We can, ask God, physical conditions allow, we can identify ourselves as much as possible. But don't make it artificial. One can be in a tribal cloth, become a sort of buffoonish, and even a sort of costume competition or something like that. But that is not quite necessary at all. What the person concerned will be most and deeply impressed will be the real expression of love from the very heart of your heart that comes forth. Now, in the mission field, sometimes what missionary will have to experience will be a sort of loneliness and desolation. I was told by one of the bishops of Church of South India, he is dead now, he told me once, after I have become a bishop and have been going about so much visiting the missions and mission stations, what I have really suffered was the loneliness I sometimes felt during my ministry. He has a wife, he has got children. And still there are certain things into which even your wife and your children cannot enter. So it is very important that one should be warned of this in the mission field when you are away. There are certain times of panic like this, a great thing coming to you when you feel so lonely, miserably lonely, though you are so surrounded with your own people, your friends, and even your wife and children, and yet you find you are just in the midst of a desert without not even a drop of water to get. That is very important, sometimes you find that. But the only thing that can really redeem is an absolute trust in the Lord and then constant and continuous and persistent fellowship and companionship with the Lord who has sent you there. Unless one begins to develop that, one can be most miserable. We know when we are in the mission field, we become so busy and got so many things to do. The church has to be built, all the pastors have to be seen to, and all the other things, so many engagements, things like that. This man comes, that man comes. In all this great business, busy life, we often forget to have that companionship with the Lord, which is so essential and so necessary for the effective fulfilling of our work, and also for having a real fellowship in your and companionship in your lonely hours. Now, when I say identifying with the people, we must understand that, just as I said yesterday, great changes are taking place in the whole of India. One of the main things that is happening today is the development of nationalism. Nationalism. Now, the church or the mission should be a mission of the people, for the people, by the people. Just as we said yesterday. So, one has to identify with the nation. If you remain alien to the nation, if you are not going to sympathize and understand the growing nationalism of this country, your church is going to be outside the whole growth and development of a better country. In India, one of the first missionaries who identified himself with the great freedom movement was T.S. Andrews, and he has made a very, very great contribution in the whole freedom movement fight. And there again, unless one is, one knows where one's main aim is and goal is, and one's loyalty is, we should be warned that one should become political. A missionary should not be political, though at the same time he should identify with the national aspirations of his own country. Culture also comes in that. There comes the national culture. You can't be away from it. You have to enter and understand the culture of the land. Of course, I have said something more in detail about it yesterday, so I don't want to go into detail today. The economic planning which the state initiates, the church or the mission cannot be outside it. It should become a part of it and give the fullest cooperation in developing it. Because we are greatly concerned with the economy of our people. And also the church is, though otherworldly, it is in the world. There is one aspect of thought that everything material is wrong and evil and all that, just like the Gnostics one did. But no, the word has become flesh. The matter and the divine have united together in the incarnation. The Lord took the material, he took water and made it as a means of regeneration. He took bread, wheat that grows from the earth and made it to be his body and the wine to be his blood. So all these things are material things. We cannot close our eyes to material things and things that are happening in the world. The Christian should be quite alive to the things that are happening in the world today, because his kingdom has to come. So in all the national and economic planning, it is certainly, it is the missions and church's duty to cooperate and enter sympathetically into this. Again, in all these things, culture, philosophy, or things like that, I always warn of being critical. And also entering into the national aspirations, one should not become politic or political. That is also important. When I speak of the economic side, I would just say one thing more. Yeah. Because sometimes it would really help a missionary going out for the first time. Don't try to have any money dealings with your people. Money dealings in the sense that let the missionary be above money transactions individually with your people. Sometimes people are going to come and ask you, "Oh, Pastor, give us 10 rupees. Such things are happening, and I will return it day after tomorrow." See, when the day after tomorrow comes, he cannot return it because he hasn't got money. So he suddenly avoids you, and he doesn't come to you. So the soul you are seeking after runs away from you when he sees the face of you. And perhaps in some cases, some missionaries have told me that people to whom he has given money, they have not seen at all in their whole lives. Bishop Walsh, Peckham Walsh, who is a very great missionary in South India, told me once, he had a gardener. He was a very good man. He worked for some time. Then he wanted 50 rupees for him to buy a cow or something like that. He gave the 50 rupees. Well, he lost 50 rupees, and also the gardener also. Not that one should not go to help him, but as far as possible, it is better to have less money transactions with your parishioners if you can really avoid it. Particularly lending money. If you have got money, give them and finish with it. Don't lend the money and give the obligation to come back and return it, because it will be very difficult for this man to return this money. That is only just not a very important point, but as I thought about it, that's why. Now, I would say, I have already said something about the missionary being an apostle, one who is sent by God. So when I say the missionary is one who is sent, for what? The missionary would say immediately, to preach the gospel. It is quite true, to preach the gospel. But don't stop with that. Because you can be a missionary, just go out and preach the gospel and come away. And you can live just as you want to or like to. No, the whole life of the missionary is a witness to the Lord. That is most important. Souls are won not by argument. Souls are won by the life led by the missionary. Often, great missionaries have been great dedicated souls, witnessing by their whole life, not only just preaching, by their whole life, the life of a Christian. I once thought that West can give two great contributions to the East. One was the sanctity of family life. When you find the good Christian families living in this country, and the sense of freedom the children have in their homes, and the way in which they live here, I had all along thought that this is a great contribution one can give in the mission field. But we must understand that foreign countries are becoming very critical of what is happening today in this country. I have heard remarks from many different foreign people coming to this country. This country is greatly blessed by two things. One is freedom and the other is wealth. This is the wealthiest country in the world, the most prosperous. People have everything they want materially. And also a country
where there is tremendous amount of freedom. But one would begin to think that are these two great blessings given to this country, are they being properly used by the people of this land? If you just refer to your papers, books, magazines, I would say no. A certain statistics come as most revealing and most tragically revealing. The freedom that you give to your young people, we coming from the foreign land, see they not properly using it, misusing it on the other hand. I was reading in the papers the other day that in New York City alone, in this year, 1958, 2 years, 1957, 2 months after the beginning of the term of the year, 1,970 girls had to be sent home because of pregnancy in the school. Now, I thought it was only in the city, but I was the other day in a small town, Paris, Illinois. They have only 12,000 people there. I was told that the last year, 6 girls have been sent away from the school because of pregnancy. Now, this is startling. People coming from the east, from countries, I mean, these things are really unheard of things. I am the pastor, I am the rector of a parish that has got 500 families. I have got 4,000 people in my parish. And I have got 2 other priests working with me. In the last 12 years of my ministry, I had only 4 broken homes. So, when you think about these things, sometimes the pride with which the American or the Englishman or the European goes to far-off countries, you would be ashamed when you study and learn the sort of family structure and the family cohesion you get in some of those places. You might think that there is no freedom for the young people to mix together. It is true. There is no American form of dating there. It is true. Marriages are arranged by their families. It is true. My father and my mother were married. My mother was only 12 years old. My father was 14 or 15. And my mother died when she was 83 years ago last year. They have often told me all through their life, they never had a single quarrel. They were the most happy couple. And they had raised 8 children. Now, I just point out this thing. See, sometimes people coming from the West see this lack of freedom for the young people to mix and all those things. And there is a tendency on your part to say that this is all bad. How can you marry without seeing your partner? How can you do? I don't mean that those things should continue as they are in Asia at all. But what I say is that whether it is right or wrong, we have very little of the teenage problem, or very little of the broken home, or very little of the laxity of morals which we find today in this country. Then the second thing is, this country is blessed with the wealth. There again I have a criticism to make. The wealth of this country, these people are all blessed. Are they using it properly? Does any person ever think that this wealth is not our own? It's a trust given to us to be utilized by me properly, by God. So, but on the other hand, you find today the love of pleasure, the love of luxury, spending money for all sorts of vices increasing. I pointed out these two things. When you go to far-off countries, you find that there are, though you go there with certain confidence, but your confidence will soon be shaken, because Eastern people are beginning to see, perhaps not always properly, they understand America only perhaps through the movies that go from there, from here. Unfortunately, I don't know why you don't send the best movies there rather than the second-rate sloppy things there. The movies, the magazines that comes with all the crimes and all these sexy things. So these things are spreading. The missionary, especially an American going from here, has got a responsibility to interpret your own life, your nation's life, your country's life better and much more clearly than the foreigner would just try to see it from the movie or the newspaper. One has to clearly show that behind all these things we find, there is a real Christian families in this country, who is the real backbone of this country. There is a real Christian virtues practiced here. There is a Christian values here that is being greatly upheld and practiced here. It is the duty of the missionary also to interpret the life of your nation and your country. Why? Because people in the East think you as a specimen of the Christian. That is why it is the missionary duty. You are the specimen of the Christian which we think, because Christianity is still a Western religion to the East. So unless you try to clear of these things, it is... I can conclude because my time is up. I would say, on the whole, the most important thing for the missionary should be his full awareness of the sense of occasion, the real deep dedication which he should have, his whole life as a witness to the gospel or the message of Christ. And if the missionary does all those things and with complete fellowship and companionship with the Lord for whom he is witnessing, identify himself with the country and the people for whom you are sent, I would say that God will immensely bless the work of the missionary, because there is nothing more sublime, there is nothing more spiritual and divinely than preaching and witnessing to the Lord.